From Peoria Public Radio, this is Out and About. I'm Nathan Irwin.
And I'm Jen Gordon with Arts Partners of Central Illinois. Today we're talking with Scott Kanoff, Chair of the Theater Arts at Bradley University. He's here to talk about the department's production of These Shining Lives. Scott, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Welcome. Good to be back.
Now, this show focuses on a rather dark episode in local Illinois history, although it starts out fairly optimistically. Can you kind of set the stage?
Yeah, it's a two-sided play. It begins very inspirationally. It's the story of the radium dial workers in Ottawa, Illinois, from 1922 to about 1934. This was right after World War I. There was a radium craze. Radium had been discovered about 30 years before by Marie Curie, and it was beginning to find industrial and commercial applications. Radium was in mouthwashes, toothpastes, makeup, and most famously, it was an ingredient in luminescent paint. And there was a craze for watches that glowed in the dark and clock faces. And painting the numbers on the dials required fine motor skills and very small hands. And the Radium Dial Corporation, which began in Chicago, soon moved to Ottawa and hired hundreds and hundreds of local young women, many of them as young as 18 or 19, some are a little younger even, and put them to work, paid them really good wages, and they became the dial painters. They were taught to point their brushes by licking the brushes with their lips and tongue, and they would say, lick, dip, paint. They would moisten the brushes with their lips, dip it in the radium paint. It was a paint made of a radium powder, and then paint the numbers very small and over again, thousands of times a day. It was not known that radium was highly toxic. It actually, I should say, it was known. The company tested them for radium contamination but never shared the results of the tests. And what had been a dream job for hundreds and hundreds of young women who were beginning to enter the workforce, it was a great opportunity to contribute to their families, to their community, and it was a big deal. Radium Dial was a huge employer in Ottawa. So it was fantastic. The play deals with the bonding and the friendships and the solidarity that these young women enjoy and the empowerment they begin to feel by being out in the working world and the satisfaction of knowing they're helping to support their families and their community. And, of course, they began to get sick. And over a period of time, many of them developed really horrible cancers and illnesses, and many of them died. All the while, the company denied responsibility. Radium was considered healthy. It was all the rage. It was in so many – it was a tonic. There were water irradiators. You could buy a water cooler for your house, the tank of which was coated with radium. And it was thought if you kept water in the tank overnight, you would have healthy water. And all it did was turn into radon, but radon gas and evaporate. So at any rate, the first half of the play is about the women who have these wonderful jobs. The second half of the play is about the class action suit that they filed and that they won, but the company appealed six times. And the woman who is the main character in the play is based on a real person, Catherine Donahue, who worked for the company for 9 years, from 1922 to 1931. She and all her friends became catastrophically ill. And there was a lawyer in Chicago named Leonard Grossman who took their case. They couldn't get a lawyer locally. They couldn't find a doctor who would diagnose them locally. So they had to go to Chicago to find a real diagnosis and became pariahs in the town. They were accused of being money grubbers, attention seekers. It was said that some of them didn't have radium poisoning. They had syphilis. The town shunned them. And eventually they won. They were awarded a very small amount of money. And Catherine Donahue was awarded, I believe, something like $5,000. By then it was 1934 and she weighed 67 pounds. And she died 3 weeks after this final appeal, which was determined by the Supreme Court. So the play is very much a celebration of the period and the American promise and the commercialism and the radio ads and the fun of life in the early 1920s and the conviviality and the friendship that these girls had on the job until things change. And it's an American dream turned upside down. Mm. It was too good to be true. So the company, ironically, shut down, reopened, doing the same thing. And radium was manufactured up through the 1950s, although it hasn't been used in watches for a long time.
So how did the department learn about this play, and what was the motivation or the impetus behind deciding to include it in this season?
I knew something about these women. I know a little bit about the history. There's a wonderful documentary called Radium City, which is about the Ottawa girls on the city of Ottawa, which was in the process at the time of being cleaned up. I believe there are still some toxic sites there, and including the graves of some of these women. If you take a Geiger counter, at the time this film was made, it would click, 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 click. And I went to Chicago to the North Light Theater, which had commissioned the play originally, although the first production was in Baltimore. And North Light then, some years later, commissioned a musical version of it. And it's a beautiful, wistful chamber musical. And I went to see that, and I was very taken with it. And then I found out about the original version of the play, which was non-musical, which I happen to prefer. And I thought it would be a great vehicle for some of our students. And, of course, I thought the story has tremendous local interest in central Illinois. So Ottawa's just up the road. So it seemed like a good idea for a number of reasons. And it's also a very beautiful play. It affords us the chance to do some wonderful things with design and with multimedia. We have one of our animation students who animated the big clock that is part of the set. And we have another multimedia student who's very talented, who's doing all the media. So it was a chance for us to do all the different things that we do theatrically in a quieter way than we sometimes do with a musical.
So the playwright for this play is Melanie Marnich, and she has had a very diverse career overlapping in TV and on the stage. Mm-hmm. Many people might have, if you're fans of The Big C, you would know her work from that. But I'm just curious, in your experience directing, do you think that playwrights who also have this television background, that it brings a different type of experience for the actors and for the audience? Does it kind of, is there a different type of engagement that it brings within the theater setting?
I don't know. I think what happens is with the explosion in television content that's happened over the last 10 years, the best writers are playwrights, the best writers of character. And I think the TV industry has been very smart to seek them out. Most of the producers on television are writers. So when you see it produced by and there are 16 people, there are writers' rooms for all of these series. Melanie was a very acclaimed, highly acclaimed playwright, one of the most celebrated young playwrights, I think, over the last 15 or 20 years in New York and around the country. And so many of the playwrights that I'm familiar with go to L.A. and they write for television and they become producers. She was on a series that has had one season called The OA, and I don't know if that's coming back or not, but that's her. I think she's the lead producer on that and has written a number of those episodes. I think good dramatic writing is good dramatic mm-hmm. writing. And the good thing about television is that it allows some really good playwrights to write over a longer form, you know, to write to sustain and even more fully develop characters than they can in a two and a half hour play. So I think it's great. And it's more work for writers, too, which is super.
Now, is this a story that still has resonance in the community of Ottawa?
From what I understand and from what I've read, yes. I believe there are still some residents who were the children of some of these women. And at the time of the film that I mentioned, Radium City, they've interviewed quite a few of them. This is a good 20 years ago, though, already. I am told that the town doesn't like to talk about it, mm-hmm. but I can't vouch for that. There's a statue of a radium girl. I think it was an 8-year-old girl lobbied to have a statue built, and her father happened to be a sculptor. And so they raised money, and there's a statue of the radium girl downtown in Ottawa. And I know the local high school produced this play some years ago. So I don't think it's a secret, and I don't think that it's something that people have – I would imagine a lot of people in town – had relatives who were involved in the story, had relatives who were ill, died, or had relatives who perhaps were high up in the company. Hard to say.
And you mentioned there's also a local connection, historical connection with a Bradley student.
There is. Yeah,
tell
we
us
have
about
Eliana
that.
Glickman is a senior, and she is a student that I met in her freshman year, and she came to me a couple of months ago after we had announced the season and said, "You're doing these Shining Lives. My great-great-uncle was the attorney who's portrayed in the play." And her great-great-uncle was Lawrence Grossman, the attorney who took the case on and fought very, very hard. And so her uncles, his sons, are coming to see the show, wow, one this week and one next week. So, yeah, there's a strong local connection.
And we should also note that one special event that you're having in conjunction with the production is on Sunday. You're holding a mock trial after the performance, as it were, or you're recreating some of the legal arguments of the case that comes out of this story.
Exactly. Geraldine Mayer, who is a retired judge and attorney, who is now the head of the Center for Legal Studies, formerly the Pre-Law Center, I reached out to her and said, "We're doing this play. Do you know anything about it?" And she did. In fact, she has a copy of the original. Her library of case law includes some old volumes that have this case in them. So we decided to do some kind of project together. 4 Bradley pre-law students, 2 on each side, will argue the case on appeal, and they will argue for and against the idea that the decisions that were made in court were the right decisions. And they will make these arguments before a panel of justices currently sitting on the 3rd District Illinois Court of Appeals, led by Judge Holdrich. And that court happens to sit in Ottawa. So we come full circle. And that's Sunday after the matinee performance. It'll be at about we'll have a talk back after the show with the cast. And then at 5 o'clock, we'll hear the arguments on the stage. So that should be a lot of fun.
And I imagine that from your perspective as an educator and a director, one other really nice aspect of this production is that it includes a lot of good roles for women. And there are a lot of plays that don't have those kinds of opportunities to this extent.
That's certainly true. And any theater educator will tell you that the percentage of women who are students is far higher than the percentage who are men. So we're always looking for plays with good roles for our young women. This play, I also wanted to be directed by a woman, and my colleague on the faculty, Sarah Salazar, who's a gifted acting teacher and young director, is staging the play. She's done a wonderful job, and it's her first main stage production as director at Bradley, so I'm thrilled that Sarah's doing that. And our students from all different classes are in the show. Sarah has decided also to create an ensemble that is not in the script, and it's an ensemble of 6 women who function like there is a personage in Japanese theater called a kokan, who is a combination of a stagehand and a character, and they dress in black, which means you don't really see them, although you do. But the audience agrees this is a trope in Japanese theater. And they'll hand off props or they will set the scene. So Sarah decided to create a Koken-like ensemble of women. There are 6 of them. They are there to suggest the numbers of women who worked in the factory. The play concerns itself with 4 women in particular, and they're fully developed, and their friendship is the story of the play. But there are always 6 other women at the work tables, on and off stage, helping the other characters to change costumes. So it's very evocative. It's very suggestive and very otherworldly. There is another layer of reality just at the periphery. So it was a brilliant idea on Sarah's part, and I think it's very effective. It's really exciting.
That's Scott Kanoff from the Bradley Theater Department talking with us about their production, These Shining Lives. The play opens tonight with performances through Sunday, March 5th at the Hartman Center. Thank you so much for your time today.
It's my pleasure.
The First United Methodist Church in downtown Peoria presents international opera singer Angela Brown in concert this Sunday at 4 p.m. Miss Brown has performed at opera houses around the world. The concert will include a varied program of spirituals, arias, and art songs. It's free and open to the public. And for more information, you can visit fumcpeoria.org.
And Peoria Reads presents author Tayari Jones reading from her book Silver Sparrow. It's their featured book this year. It's the story of two African-American teenagers who learn they have the same father. That's Sunday afternoon from 1 to 3 at the North Branch of the Peoria Public Library.
Out and About is a production of Peoria Public Radio and Arts Partners of Central Illinois. Each week, we connect you to the arts community by talking with local arts leaders and performers.
Our producer is Sierra Doss. You can learn more about Peoria Public Radio when you visit our website, peoriapublicradio.org. I'm Nathan Irwin, and this is Out and About.